Dark Wings.
Dork Words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 3, Episode 4.
And now his watch is ended.
Holy shit, you guys. How about that sacking of what is the unsullied town?
Astapor.
Astapor, thank you. I was going to say Old Gis.
Their ass got sacked.
That's like the most badass. I mean, finally there's like some CGI put to good use to illustrate scale. Even though, I mean, you only get the vaguest long-distance glimpses. But, I mean, all those helmets, all those dudes in formation.
All that copying and pasting.
That's right. Some poor animator.
They give that to the intern. They're just like, you know, copy and paste these dudes.
Yeah, there's some good long
Make
shots.
A straight line. A
couple short tracking shots that look pretty good.
The marching out of town with the mm-hmm. three dragons. I mean, yeah, that was like that.
A good shot of all the fire, like Daenerys is standing there. And then yeah,
that,
like
that was almost a bit too much for
me. Wall of flame. Mm-hmm. Oh.
The wall of flame?
You'll live.
The badass look on her face.
I got an erection for her look.
It was like a Nissan car commercial or something where they're being gratuitous.
Yeah, but then you buy
then
one.
Then she throws down the whip.
I loved it.
Gives that stare off in the distance.
I wish she had been like this the whole time. She finally came into herself in episode...
Season 3.
48.
I mean, Mormont's just like, whoa. He's like, I think he had an erection. I mean, he already likes her quite a bit. And
Khaleesi!
Whoa.
Nice!
Maybe he was a bit scared of her
yeah.
at this point.
That's a little bit of kind of like a storytelling, you know... An unrealistic character thing that Daenerys would have gone into that moment without
even discussing this with
exactly
because they mean, were just like woo.
But it's so cool to see it through, you know, Barristan or Jorah's eyes, just like, you know, the surprise you want to.
He gets that smile on his face. Jorah does when they start
surprised
the slow clap.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. Jorah was yeah. He had a little.
They all do.
Glimpse of pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been hungry for this for two seasons.
This is, it's maybe my favorite moment in the whole series is that this moment when Daenerys kind of comes into her own.
Finally.
And she does this bold reversal and the dragon finally does something badass.
You know, I speak Valyrian.
Yeah. We're in mother tongue. No big deal.
But as it was happening this time, I felt like maybe the moment where she kind of gives the Dracaro order to Valyrian, or no, not Valyrian. What's the name of her dragon?
Viserion.
Eviscerated.
One was named after her brother, one was named after her lover, one was named after her other brother. The old dude.
Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
Rago?
Yeah. Daryl!
Good Foley work.
But I felt like maybe it was a repetition of the way that she escaped from the House of the Undying. It's not quite the same. She wasn't escaping. She was just sort of...
It was
spur
of
the moment
mechanism.
Thing
she was on the attack instead of the defense.
It didn't remind me of it, though, for some reason.
Okay. Well, it didn't when I read the books. It just somehow... Maybe it's just because you see the dragon so sparingly. If every other time you see the dragon, she says Ricaro and he burns somebody up, I'll be disappointed. But
is that all the slaves need is to see the whip change hands and then they're
I mean that's
kinda, how well they're trained. That's too well.
Exactly.
Almost too well.
Well, so if
but then
they're
she's...
defending their master with the whip and somebody grabs it out of the master's hand, do they immediately change sides?
Don't get too caught up on.
Well, I want to know
semantics.
Answers because
right. I think that the level of complexity of their indoctrination is such that they understand the authority, and even though the whip is purely symbolic,
but that was a pretty bad deal, you know. Or,
by the power vested me in whip, I beseech.
They don't understand bad deals. They don't have
well, it
law
wasn't
degrees.
I, perhaps one might infer that having lived a life of slavery, that it wouldn't be that hard to convince them to turn on the masters that have been punishing them all these years.
But they're robots. They don't think that way.
They don't, but she,
but
she's
the nipple ripping.
She just set them all free. Well, yeah. I mean, they were...
They know what free means? Probably not.
Not sure.
In the books, they...
I saw this in Shawshank
Redemption. It's fairly well conveyed that they struggle with the concept of being free because they are so brainwashed.
Because, I mean, what? In the books, like, they draw a name tag out of a bowl, like, every day, pretty much.
They they rename themselves.
This one made a name tag.
I had forgotten the whole thing about how the language of Astapor was Valyrian and that she understood it. I mean, that for the show, that's pretty awesome after all the shit talking that guy was doing.
I like how he was, you knew I called you bitch all those times, didn't you?
I think he exclusively called her slut.
Yeah, slut.
Yes.
Which is
good attention to detail. Sorry.
Yeah.
Did he pop the C word in there at all? Maybe. I don't know.
Do they have one of those in Valyrian?
Someone has said it already in the show at some point, I think.
Well, in that tongue, I mean, is there a translation?
Pop that tongue in the C.
There's one in every tongue.
Or, sorry.
There's a tongue in every one, I think is what you're looking for.
Is it though?
Sorry. But man,
the best end to an episode.
There was a little more mayhem and carnage that we saw before the fade out to the smoking ruins and the charred corpse. I guess that was the charred corpse of the slaver that she bought the Unsullied from, right?
Can I say a word or two about last week's episode?
Mm.
I thought that, who's the guy who did Boogie Nights and...
Director?
Yeah. Was he the same guy who did...
Paul Thomas Anderson?
There Will Be Blood?
Yeah.
You know the similarities between those movies about he has a mechanism where he does something really innocent seeming and then he does something absolutely shocking right after it, where in Boogie Nights when what's his name?
Don Tito wants to buy some donuts?
No. Well, when William H. Macy is at the New Year's Eve party and he just comes and blows his brains out in front of everyone. And yeah, when Don Cheadle, when the like guy blows the guy away in the donut shop and then there's a thing, and then in There Will Be Blood at the end with the bowling alley, and it seems like a real kind of Keystone Copsian scene, and then he just
goes
caves
nuts.
The guy's skull in with a bowling ball, and you're just like, oh, just trying to come to terms with the surreal versus the real. The cutting to the rock music, the Hold Steady last episode, I thought was a great Tarantino-esque two move, like going from Jamie getting his hand cut off to just write into something completely, like, you know, so surreal.
For something completely different?
Yeah. And I was reading on the internet, and there was nothing but complaints about it. People were just like, that was the worst pick I've ever heard music. It ruined the scene. It completely, they had just done something cool, and then it completely took you out of the world, didn't suspend disbelief. People were just so angry. And I thought it was fantastic.
I thought it was pretty cool. And you're amped up, like you're just like, what? Yeah. And then something rocking just to kind of,
but too, it's just so weird. It was such that him getting his hand cut off was a departure from maybe what you thought was about to happen, and then you go into a full, like, instead of, you know, old-timey or medieval music, you're like into this, it's just more like mind screwing. And I thought it was a great follow-up to the action that just happened, and boy, the internet did not agree.
Well,
internet.
Fuck them.
Yeah, I guess.
Except for our listeners.
Listeners,
comment.
You know, you realize we are the internet, Craig. I mean,
we are the net. We are the children.
So we can feel a certain way about that.
Right?
We are MetaNet.
I don't mind the sort of anachronism of the modern rock music over the credits. And I like the idea of having kind of a cool indie band like the Hold Steady compose an arrangement of The Bear and the Maiden Fair. I just don't like the song. I don't like the way they did it. It's a great idea on paper, and it just didn't turn out that cool. But you can't ask the Hold Steady to do it and then say,
we'll do it this way.
Your version sucks.
Yeah. Back to the drawing board. Nice try.
Right.
Or I wonder if they even asked them. Or I wonder if the band just did it.
They had done it before.
And they're like, just like, hey, we did this. We love your show. And they would be like, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Right, who knows? Maybe.
Craig search the internet.
We'll have to get the hold steady on his guests here.
We should. We could. Them. I mean,
we
podcasters have like bullshitted their way into cooler interviews than that.
Yeah, but we don't know how to do that.
Well,
you're not supposed to say that, are you?
That we don't know how to.
Right.
Make cold phone calls and
we could just each take on a voice of one of the members of the Hold Steady and oh look, here they are.
Hey fellas.
Take your shoes off.
Grab a mic.
Heard you were podcasting about us up here.
So we flew in.
Suddenly.
And boy are our arms tired. And
that is what? Exactly what they sound like, I bet.
That's so, you are, I believe you prefer just to be addressed as vocalist for the Hold Steady.
Aye.
And how long have you been watching the show?
They're Irish now?
Aye.
Brooklyn's favorite Irish bar band. Non-Irish music.
Well, thanks for stopping by, guys. That was thrilling. Well, anyway, nice try on the Bear and the Maiden Fair rock and roll. I thought, isn't it a song that has like 1,000 verses and it goes on forever?
Don't they do
or,
it
or
over,
it's implied that they do, but
in the book they do it during some scene, some ceremony and or some celebration and someone's like, sing another verse of the Bear and the Maiden Fair because we're talking in private over here.
That sounds keep familiar going. Yeah, maybe.
It would like, fit as a good marching song if it had 1,000 verses.
It's like 99 bottles of beer on the wall type deal.
Well, they did introduce it as a marching song in that episode, right? Is that what you're alluding to? Yeah, okay. But I never imagined it as a marching song.
Is it a rebel song?
It is not a rebel song.
I think
it is the Bear and the Maiden Fair.
I think the problem with the song or the rendition may not be the song itself, but just your imagination.
The problem is my imagination?
Yep.
Ooh.
See that you never use it again.
Well, I'm not having to use it as much this season as in the past. They're throwing us some cool surprises this season.
Yeah.
Like Varys opening the crate.
That's
like out of the blue, right?
Yeah,
that's completely. Like fully invented weirdness.
See,
I mean, you hear the story about how he gets cut, but...
But I that scene
good
was
good
so
timing. I mean, yeah. He gets to tell the story right then and there.
It was stylized. That scene was really... I was halfway through, I was like, wait... He's kind of already touching this. Why is he telling Tyrion? Tyrion doesn't care. And then he opens the crate, and you realize that he's really telling probably the guy who's in the crate. So then,
well, and I mean, the audience. Tyrion's like, yeah, I want actual revenge. And then he tells the whole story and then opens the crate, and he's like,
actual revenge.
I want actual revenge, too.
I was kind of expecting a leg lamp when he opened the crate.
Did it say Fragile on the side?
In Valyrian.
It's Italian for sorcerer.
You've always hated this sorcerer. There's a lot sort of conveyed in that.
A good
scene.
Story of Varys's
his
I did shit jobs and did whatever I could to basically get revenge, I guess.
I wish they had not done the season 2 or season 1 his speech thing. I wish, you know, about his past. I wish they had only had this one.
Well, it's good for his.
It's good for him.
Some background on the character. You needed to understand who he was back in season 1, too. But
well, everyone calls him Ballas, so
yeah,
I think you pretty much have an idea.
The eunuch jokes, really.
The eunuch jokes, yeah. Which
a decrepit
Lady Olenna got one in. Yeah.
Walk into a bar.
Varys. Kind of uncharacteristically, well,
he gives away a lot. I mean, I don't.
He's
think
opened
he would...
up to Tyrion before,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's never. I mean, revealing that in that moment is kind of showing an awful lot of trust and stuff. I mean, I not that he has anything to lose if anybody found out that that's what he was up to.
Right, except, it's not critical information.
But I don't think he wants people to think that he's creepy and dangerous or weird. And well, they think he's creepy, but. Not because he's not that creepy, you know?
Yeah.
He likes to be, what's the word? Not eccentric, but...
creepy.
Just creepy enough.
enigmatic, mysterious.
I would have accepted eccentric.
Yeah.
What episode are they going to quit talking about Podrick's amazing dick in?
Yeah,
in a row. Like, we're going to hear about it next week, too.
I don't know what that's all about.
Jeez.
Too large, not too small.
I don't get it.
The bear and the maiden fair.
Indescribable.
Yeah, I thought they should have cut that out.
I mean, it was enough for them to make Podrick be a competent...
fucker.
I was going to say...
lover.
Just like Paige or whatever it is he is. without stammering all the time. Like, he's like so painfully shy in the books to the point of being dysfunctional. And on the show, he's just... quiet and competent and obedient.
But quite functional.
But he's a high-functioning fucker. That everyone's talking about.
Talk of the town.
Amazing. Yeah.
What do we think of, now that we're on the Roz...
tip?
Yeah, we're on the Roz tip. What do we think of that combo?
I like the idea that she's kind of an informant to Varys of Littlefinger's dealings, although dangerous for her to do that.
Yep. He hasn't been that great to her in the past, Littlefinger, I mean.
Mm-hmm. And she's an ex-hooker now.
Yeah. She's good. Moved up.
I guess because she's a madam or...
Mm-hmm. Or former profession.
Or she's like an personal secretary.
Female, like an office manager.
Female
now.
Pimp.
So like a
boss.
Administrative assistant.
Which would explain her having the inventory of the ship at her disposal.
I believe that's called a manifest.
Yes. Yes.
Destiny.
I like that Varys didn't immediately get what he was looking for.
And you're about to tell me.
Even though he opened it with such...
glee?
Yeah. He's just like, ooh, show me.
Oh.
What am I looking at?
Two feather beds.
It's upside down. Turn that.
Yeah.
Fancy that you can read from your profession. I can't read. Tell me what it says.
I just saw there were two of something. I know my numbers.
Roz is an enigma.
Yeah.
Who knows what... maybe she will ascend to be the...
Who knows what team she's batting for.
The king.
What are the odds from last week? I mean, we've got Pod, now we've got Roz in the mix.
Pod and Roz.
Starting the old PR campaign.
In the moaning.
That's only in the moaning.
I mean, we get some more invented type stuff with Theon, a real... mind fuck for him. Jeez.
That was
for everybody.
They did a good job of making that mysterious. I had an idea where it was going, and it sort of went there, but not quite in the way I expected.
It's pretty clear towards the end that he wasn't taking him to his sister, but I thought he might be taking him to, I don't know what else.
Yeah.
I started to think, is he going to light the torch and Yara will be dead there somehow, and then it'll be the reversal, but it was a little more twisted than that, yeah. I guess. Or they can't kill Yara off yet.
The guy had a good psycho look, too, when he brought him back.
But part of it, too, is just kind of like accepting that what they're telling you is accurate. So, like, when they're creeping into this castle, and they're talking about it like it's Deepwood Mott, right? That's the castle that Yara took.
Mm-hmm.
Theon grew up in the north. He would have been to Deepwood Mott and know what it looked like. So the idea that they're sneaking into this castle that's the same one that he just escaped from and he didn't know...
I don't know, man.
...is a little strange.
My friend Clint had like never been out of Omaha or something until he was like 22.
Yeah, so. but Theon had been...
You don't know.
...around...
There's only two places you know he's been.
He's been with the Starks the whole time. So.
I want to say there's actually... Well, I won't say it. I want to say something that would prove me more right than you know, but I won't.
Then I appreciate you holding your
tongue. Edit it into the podcast later.
Does fast traveling become a skill in the book later on? Because that would explain why he might have been there.
I'm with you. There were some contrivances. Also... The only time I think I remarked out loud during the show was, how is he walking on that foot now? That's, you know, you get an auger to the foot, pretty much bore out the entire inside of your foot, and then...
He's had a whole week for it to heal.
And then a week later, with absolutely no medication or anything, you're just like, well, let's get walking.
Well, I just said a week because the episodes are a week apart. He didn't actually have a week.
If you just pack that hole full of some lichen and some...
leeches?
I'm liking it.
I want...
It's not that funny.
My imagination says it is.
Ooh.
We talked about this.
Your foot can heal differently depending on which god you pray to. Don't forget that.
I mean, if that happened to one of us right now, and we went to the best doctor there was in the world with modern medicine, I don't think we would be walking on it in a couple days.
You would request that I take you to the library pub, so...
That did happen in real life. I sprained my ankle out. I was running.
Probably broke your ankle.
Yeah. Trying to jump on a trampoline that I never made it to and fell off a ledge. And Mike was there and Mike takes care of business when he needs to, but he maybe isn't the biggest pillar of compassion sometimes. So we get back to the car and I'm just holding my ankle, screaming in pain, just writhing in pain. And Mike kind of like helplessly goes, well, where do we have to go? And he seemed reluctant to take me to the hospital, so I said, just go to the bar. Just take me to the bar. So we went there, and it was real busy. Everyone like made room for me. Someone got ice for my foot. Someone got me a shot of tequila that I poured on my ankle. No, I drank it.
So you're the hero in this. Okay.
So anyway.
We'll leave it at that.
We could all tell that story Rashomon style, but... I wasn't there, so.
I wasn't either.
Oh, Rochambeau style?
That's what I was going for.
Do you know what Rashomon is referring to?
No.
No.
Is it a Jewish holiday?
I won't tell you.
In some families, maybe. Oh, no,
it's a Kurosawa movie.
Well, it seems to be the one movie everyone references when it's like a story that's told from different characters' point of view. Like, so the first third of it is like one character's example, and then back to scene one from another character's point of view. That's Rashomon style.
Got it. Now I know.
Should we talk about the episodes some more?
I'm having fun.
Phil said something about godliness and. I was going to say, we're not...
It's next to cleanliness.
We're not godly men like Craster is.
No.
Man.
But Craster's definitely not next to cleanliness. I'm a godly man!
Sometimes people have had enough.
What god is he praying to? Gotta tell you.
The others.
God, two things...
The White Walkers.
Two things I speculated on came true in this episode.
Which are?
Hold on.
Don't spoil the other one if we haven't talked about it.
We did.
Okay.
They just said fuck Craster and did him in.
That's right.
There was some good foreshadowing that there was some discontent among the ranks of the Night's Watch survivors.
A little bit of foreshadowing. The like necessary amount.
Yeah.
Without tipping.
Without making some people, though I could. Like some people might have similar thoughts to me. Just stopping by at Craster's again, and they're hungry as shit. Why not just fucking take the place over?
You have to kill one person.
The problem is now that they've lost their ally that's halfway between the wall and the deep north. You know, he was always there. He was crotchety and stuff, but he always had he had a meal for him every time they stopped.
They had a gift for him every time they stopped.
It's true. But now...
He gave him some sawdust bread.
That place, when they leave, that place will fall into disrepair. There'll be nothing left. They'll never have that kind of pit stop or rest area.
They're probably not going to give a shit. And like,
yeah.
There's a chance for more males to come into fruition now. Somebody to step up, take care of that place.
What do you think's going to happen with all the ladies, Phil? Mm-hmm. Think they're going to come with, stay put?
Hey, ladies!
They're going to get funky. Got it.
They're going to get... That's a pretty awesome scene, too. That whole Lord Mormont and Craster both getting murdered by villainous desperate Night's Watchman.
I mean, I forget the Night Watchman's name, who's supposed to watch Sam, and then he just fucking stabs Mormont in the back and then
literally
choked out, and then waits when he's on the ground, the guy pulls out a knife and stabs him. It's like, ugh.
It's a good show of the desperate times, desperate measures.
But, I mean, it
and brothers fighting brothers.
Sam makes a cool break for it.
He was slowly running pretty fast.
Not at first.
He picked up speed.
He kind of stayed around to give the obligatory, what the fuck is happening, for a little bit.
Did you wonder, like, after the Sam and Gilly conversation, where she's like, I don't want your fucking thimble. I want to get out of here with my baby. Can you do anything about that? And he's hopeless. He can't do anything, right? And circumstances are...
present themselves. I mean,
you certainly couldn't imagine Lord Commander Mormont allowing him to take her and the baby back to the wall, right?
Right. But lo.
But hey, ho.
Let's go.
So that's cool. But the one thing I didn't get, though, is Stabby, like, somehow is aware.
I'm going to get you, Piggy. I'm coming after you.
And your little Piggy, too.
It's the one thing I remembered.
That was a bit much.
I'll bet he becomes king.
The Stabby?
Stabby.
Stabby McPiggy hater.
We haven't even touched on the opening scene.
The open?
I mean...
yeah, that's some cool shit, too. Real cool.
We see the recap from last week. Hand cut off.
Yeah.
Close-up of a hand.
Credit sequence before you see...
yeah.
Open on the hand.
Yeah. But still.
But still.
Open on the hand, baby.
Open on the hand, because the stump can't hear you, because it's a bloody stump.
Jamie really gets a little more abuse, a lot more.
He reaches his lowest point, and then he gets lower than that.
Well, he pulls the old disarm your captor, get the
with humor
sword from them.
not with humor.
With drinking horse piss. Gets him every time.
Why do you spit it out? That's still something, you know.
Survivor Man would tell you that you could still rehydrate with that.
That's right.
Or something, right? That's a person, right? Survivor Man?
Yep.
And it tasted fine to him until somebody mentioned it was horse piss.
My second conversation today with someone about drinking piss.
Well, maybe his throat was so dry that he gulped enough of it down while his taste buds were just like
reabsorbing.
It's the most delicious horse piss he's ever had.
You don't want to know about my first?
Your first
time? Your first
time drinking horse piss?
No. Never mind. I'm surprised Brienne didn't get a smack more or two. She was off her horse.
Yeah.
Man.
Literally.
Just off her horse.
There's lots of concern in Brienne's
They're lovers now.
I mean,
my book.
She asked a question.
Didn't get an
Why'd
answer.
Why'd you do that? Cut! Boom.
Well, what about this?
I thought he was going to say, "You're all I have," or something non-committal.
You're all I got, baby. No.
The quips are all gone.
You forgot your quip.
It's a low point.
I threw my quip into the sand.
Season 3, episode 4, the quips are all gone.
Quips.
It anagrams into the old breakfast cereal, Quisp. Is that what you're going to say?
No. I was going to say, so how about the whole reason for feeling sympathy for Jaime Lannister all of a sudden? And Theon, for that matter.
Did you feel a thing?
Well,
he's all she has. He's all we have.
I think you have to be conflicted when...
especially
Jaime's a pretty cut-and-dried villain from the get-go, from the very beginning of the series.
Terrible shit. Terrible.
Just like, who would carelessly murder a child and then just go back to fucking his sister?
In that order.
You can't see, but Mike just raised his hand. I don't know if we can say that.
Jason, never mind. Edit this out.
I was like, it's okay, Mike doesn't have a sister, but then I remembered he does. POV Jamie. You said last season,
POV
the first
Jamie.
POV Jamie chapter was this book.
Yes.
So are we being made to be POV Jamie more by feeling sympathy from him from the way things are framed?
Well, kind of. But I mean, just the revelation that Jamie was a POV character in A Storm of Swords. I shouldn't say that. He wasn't the first villainous character to have a POV, because Theon was POV in the second book, wasn't he? so never mind. But those two in particular, that such high profile main characters are also bad guys, but then a lot of bad shit happens to them. As much bad shit happens to them as happened to
anybody
the Stark
else.
Family, yeah.
Is it true to say that no one is ever a villain in their point of view chapters? It's their point of view, but you could still have someone theoretically doing something terrible from their own point of view, but that's just not the way that things are written.
Well, not exactly. I mean, Jaime still thinks some pretty sinister thoughts when you're sort of inside his head in his POV chapter. Not sinister, but cavalier.
He's like,
heartless,
oh, I could grab
uncaring.
His swords and kill Brienne and just be off with it.
I mean, he thinks as many mean things about Brienne as he says to her.
It's still a sympathetic vehicle, though, to
but,
tell
but
it from
he also,
point of view.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't really told the story of how he became the Kingslayer yet, has he? But I think that's coming.
I can only assume a Fusro Da was involved.
Is that a Jewish holiday?
He did tell the story somewhere towards the beginning of the third book, I thought I read it in a chapter summary, but it hasn't come up yet.
Well, it's only, yeah, at this point now that he's vulnerable and...
to infection.
And Brienne, who's honorable, starts to befriend him, that he has someone to open up to that might care what he has to say, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody really treats Jaime all that great, well, except for all the soldiers that praise him. And well, we haven't seen that much of Jaime in his glory on this show.
No.
It's all sort of just hints of what his life was like leading up to like the events that precede this show. That you get a sense. I mean, he's more legend than man.
Yeah, and he's not that old, but he's already just legendary. I think he did his most badass stuff between the ages of like 15 and 20 or something in the books.
Maybe. He was the youngest knight ever sworn into the Kingsguard. But it's a great story, and he'll tell it in due time. I was going to point out that the guy who has Jaime in captivity... I don't know if they said his name, but his character's name is Locke, according to IMDb.
Hmm.
And the actor I said was recognizable. His name is Noah Taylor.
Is he in Braveheart?
He might have been. He was like the rock band manager in Almost Famous and a number of other things. But anyway,
he was Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
But I had to... I went to IMDb right before we started because I wanted to look that up. And right on the homepage, like the very first thing, it said most viewed Game of Thrones was like one of the most viewed things on IMDb.
Hmm.
And I had to scroll past dozens of names to like... I mean...
Of course it is because nobody knows how the fuck to keep track of all the characters.
Maybe, at least...
how they might be spelled.
Yep.
100 yep. different characters. I mean, just having this one page open is...
Don't ever click the full cast link.
It'll crash your phone.
It'll crash the internet.
Well, that's what I have open on my phone right now. And it's still working.
It's not a shitty Apple. It's a droid.
That's right.
Oh, we don't want to get into that.
Nope.
Samsung Galaxy
cut
S3.
Cut it out.
A little embedded advertising there.
We've had a few plugs. Library Pub. Droid phone.
Tequila.
Oh, I just found something, and I know the name of the character that was tormenting Theon. But it hasn't been revealed on the show yet, so...
His name
is... did the guy shoot arrows last week in his own boys, then? Kill him? The point blank...
He did.
I mean, even
said,
for effect.
Then he blamed it all on Theon.
He did blame it on Theon. It's not clear if he's in command of those other guys and pretending to serve them, or if he's serving them... but serving his own
needs.
Twisted agenda, or if he's just...
How to serve humans.
What other needs were there? They had Theon tied up, like they're at the same point now. Nothing.
Well, so was Theon not giving them the information that they wanted? I mean, it sounded to me like he was telling them everything they wanted to hear.
I mean, did he want the information that Theon fucked up and was like, Ned Stark's the best dad I ever had?
Well, that was nice to hear Theon say that. I don't think he ever came right out and said that in the books, but he certainly feels regret for doing what he did.
He certainly feels egret.
Oh, he wishes. but she's kissed by fire.
She's lucky.
But he did reveal a useful piece of information before he was put back up on the cross, which was that he didn't kill the Stark boys, that he killed the two innocent orphans.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Which maybe is the one crumb of information that they were looking for all along.
They really just wanted to torture him.
That's a very odd way to get that piece of information, because they could have asked him whatever question they wanted to. And
he wasn't leading him with any questions to get to that nugget of truth.
Did you kill the Stark boys?
Theon's such a pussy that he would give up any information with a screw, or without a screw going through his foot.
But it's a worthy gambit to and I think a frequently used interrogator's trick to
befriend your,
or to let someone think that they're safe again, and then just see what they'll reveal. Not even necessarily in search of anything specific, but just see what they'll reveal when they're not under duress anymore.
Did they have such advanced interrogation tactics back in
the Middle Ages?
Well, not the Middle Ages.
When they invented the Iron Maiden and the rack.
Have you seen the old rat nine through the chest thing?
In the Seven Kingdoms, do they have that layered level of interrogation?
Well, I'll refer you back to Mike's rat comment. That was, maybe unsophisticated. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, perhaps this individual is a more sophisticated persuasion.
I don't even think you could get a master's in interrogation back then.
You could get the porridge plague or whatever.
Oh, you.
Oh, Sansa.
Oh, me.
Hey, so that was a pretty... You really got me. There's a cool series of events there that happen.
Starting with the...
Varys and Olenna.
The scene starts at, what, where the wedding's going to be?
The Sept.
Oh, have we seen...
Which is, like, the most awesome place in King's Landing.
Have
apparently.
We seen
like,
that room before?
No.
More, the High Sept?
More better than the throne room, you know? Yeah. Like,
it is.
It's great. They got the seven-pointed star and the whole...
And the big statues of the seven aspects of the gods.
Shout them out. 1, 2, 3. Sam. The mother... Let's do this.
The father. The father?
We already don't know.
Oh, God, I wish I still knew the Skyrim gods.
The warrior.
The mother, the warrior, the stranger, the crone.
The crone. Nice.
Crohn's disease?
Aww. The
bard?
The daughter?
We don't know it. We don't know him.
Wow. Well...
We'll see where you guys go in the afterlife.
I said I was distancing myself from the book, so I'll be pleasantly surprised what are the three that I couldn't remember. I mean, so Varys has that conversation with Olenna. He's kind of like, are you looking out for Sansa? Because I am too, and I think it's going to be bad news for her if Littlefinger gets away with her.
He would love to be the King of Ashes.
Or no, it'll be bad news for us.
Yeah.
If Littlefinger somehow weasels his way into a claim to the North. Through marriage to Sansa, and says, I have a plan, and Olenna's like, oh, it's you don't have to be a genius to figure out the answer to that one. And then it might be the very next scene, or shortly thereafter, Margaery tentatively, well, she charms Sansa, and then says, wouldn't it be neat if you married my brother? And when I'm queen, I can send you to my hometown.
And she says, Loras, I mean.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who?
That's what
we
she
all
says.
Know Sansa wants to,
yep.
You know.
Sansa's, always had a thing for Loras, and maybe is a little clueless that Loras is lighting the loafers.
Probably.
He needs to put a couple pennies in those. Keep the weight up.
Penny loafers.
I didn't get that, but I appreciate it.
So before, we get the whole Joffrey, Margaery, and then
Joffrey's
Olenna.
Just...
Cersei, dual combos.
Joffrey's just porridge in Margaery's hands.
Yeah, he's going to get the porridge plague if he doesn't be
Porridge
careful.
Plague in his hands.
And he'll enjoy it.
And Cersei gets it. It's not, it's obvious. She's
just
kind of
listening the whole time, you know.
Oh, and she goes to Lord Tywin, and she's open strong with...
Good scene.
Did it ever occur to you that I'm the smart one in the family?
God,
and that you should listen to me? And he's like, all right. And he's great too, which is like, you know, that maybe that I have something to contribute or whatever. And he's like, all right, contribute.
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 As they say.
As she says. And then her big contribution is, help me with the scheming little thing that I'm obsessing over, instead of actually saying something useful, right?
Yeah.
She totally undermines herself as soon as she sort of makes her bold play. But that's a great scene. That's like, I'm really liking Cersei this season.
That was one of her best, so far.
All of his kids keep coming up to him, trying to make strong plays, and
he's not happy with anyone right now. No one, you know.
Well, and earlier, I mean, like, you would think that Jaime is his favorite, right? Because Jaime is the badass. But I was thinking back to, it might have been season one or the first scene of season two, where there's a good strong scene where Tywin is super dismissive and condescending to Jaime.
Yeah,
because
he's cutting the deer up or whatever. Well, he took the white. He instead of going on to be his great destiny of leading Vans, becoming, you know, super regal, he's just like, well, I'll just be a bodyguard. And Tywin was like, what the fuck?
Did they convey that on the show, though, or do we just know that from the book?
I thought they did they?
Oh, was Tywin saying something to the effect of, now that Robert's dead, quit the Kingsguard and go back and take over?
He was just mad that Casterly Rock took it in the first place. Yeah, he was.
Right.
I think in season one, episode maybe one or two, they actually talk about, he and Cersei talk about him taking it so that he could stay close to her.
Yeah, I remember that.
They did on the show? Because that's a revelation that only comes much later in the book. You don't really, that's another case of, you don't really know why something is the way it is until much later. But, hey.
Oh.
We get an awkward wave from Joffrey at the end of that. It's like, ooh.
They're all chanting Lady Marjorie's name. Yeah.
Then they were started throwing the Joffreys a little bit. He's like, ooh, they like me?
Someone better say Joffrey.
he's
got a crossbow. Someone say Joffrey.
Oh, my God.
Man, if only him and Sansa would get married, they could be the two most naive people in the in all of Westeros.
Joffrey and Sansa?
Yeah.
They
would know nothing about ruling.
One thing Cersei was saying, she's like, we can't control this Tyrell broad. She's trouble. She is trouble.
The thing is, though, she's trouble for the Lannister, for Cersei's
plans
and grip on her influence as Queen Regent, but she's not really trouble for the kingdom or the war efforts. In fact, everything she's doing, even though it's self-serving, is good for everyone. That's kind of the beauty of Marjorie. Is she's smart and
it's part hot. Of it. I don't think that's the part Craig likes.
Oh, I like all the girls. Come on.
When she was describing how her older sister or whatever used to... Older sister or cousin? Yeah,
older. Or
used to tease her for being all arms and elbows or something.
Knees and elbows.
And
Knees and elbows, knees and toes. What?
Pig nose. Knees pig and elbows. Nose. Pig nose.
I was just imagining her, I don't know, like her, the space between her eyes being the thing that she would be teased for.
God, I hate this scene where Theon is just running, walking fast, brisk, no problem at all.
Oh. I thought you just hated it because of what the story was trying to convey or what he had to say. It's just, how is he walking on that augured foot?
They made him tougher back then.
I guess. Iron.
Yeah.
He paid the iron price
to get his foot fixed.
We haven't talked about any Arya storyline action yet.
Yeah.
Pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
The bannerless men, turns out, have a banner.
We meet a new guy. We meet the head.
Do we recognize Beric Dondarrion from having been glimpsed at all in season one?
I think he was an almost famous...
He was the drummer.
Did he have an eye patch in Almost Famous?
Yes.
He did. Duh. It was packed in his suitcase the whole time. You didn't see it. But.
I don't remember seeing him earlier in the show. I seem to remember one scene. People out in the middle of there was a fight. There was a fire. That describes a lot of scenes.
Supposed to be, Thoros is the guy who fights at the tourney, right?
That's one of the great shortcomings of season one was how they spent like negative budget on the tourney of the king's hand, which in the books
is the most expensive event ever to take place.
Exactly. It sort of bankrupts the kingdom to put on this elaborate affair, and so many characters are introduced in copious detail and in the at that moment. And Beric Dondarrion is one of those, and he's introduced as this sort of young, brash, hotshot knight, not unlike Sir Loras or others.
Did he have the patch back then?
No, he had both eyes when Lord Stark commanded that he bring the mountain to justice. That scene is so good, this episode. I mean, there's a lot of backstory there. I was wondering, like, we were speculating that somehow they were just going to composite some more characters into Thoros and Lemon Cloak, but
I mean, if you think about it, what's going to happen? They can't really composite too many.
Right, that's what I was saying last time. The badass stuff that's coming is still going to happen exactly as it did.
The Hound is finally his own man and a cool... He's not just sort of like drunk and surly, sulking around the castle. He's like kind of a badass, sticking up for himself. And he's
convincing. He's good.
He's like,
he's convincing as a tough guy who's on equal footing with these other tough guys. And
just because I'm not a Clegane doesn't make me.
And he's singularly alone too in this show. He doesn't have an ally. He doesn't have a partner, a friend, nothing. He's just really his own guy.
Yeah.
That dog.
And Arya is a badass.
Yeah.
I was wondering right when that was all happening if they were going to have her bring up the Micah thing. Because who even remembers Micah from like episode 2 of season 1?
She does.
Well, Arya does. Yeah. And that's cool. The Hound says that thing about her. Is she like the...
He was a bleeder.
Is she the bravest one in the room or whatever?
And Dondarrion's like...
But I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah. I thought they might go ahead with the duel or whatever.
Our second trial by combat.
Our second trial by combat on the show.
God, you know what I would do in that battle? Just light something on fire and throw it at him.
Bring the Hound to heel.
Maybe light your blade on fire.
Maybe.
It's interesting. You made the interesting comment too that they've all sort of converted to following the Lord of Light, right?
Boom. The one true God.
Mm-hmm.
Can they prove it?
I think we'll find out next week. Oh, that was another funky thing. I didn't remember the bit about Varys and the sorcerer. And how the sorcerer fried his balls to...
And then, like, heard the voice, and yeah.
I completely forgotten that from the books. I mean, that part, that whole story is accurate, but the thing of having the guy in the crate, that never happened, so...
Did his fried balls smell as good as the burning Bannon?
Burning Bannon. I like that moment. I think that's from the book, too. Don't they say something like that? Never thought he would smell so good.
I don't remember. Cooking. That guy's pretty.
A lot of talk of eating the dead north of the wall in the hard winters, you know, and they don't think about it.
You get hungry, man. What are you gonna do?
They could have. Then we could have avoided this whole Craster fuck up.
Yeah.
But would you want to eat dead flesh that might be reanimating?
Yes.
Mike is right there.
Ask a direct question.
He'll try anything once.
Get a direct answer.
Almost anything.
Fried balls.
Ooh, yeah.
What kind of god commands you to fry a little boy's balls and then speaks to you?
Doesn't sound like a god to me. It sounded like a
demon
spirit type thing, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Play for the black power. Not that kind of black power. The dark arts.
Sorry, I ruined your Black Panther party.
You beat me to it by like 1 second. We missed the Bran short little scene. Yeah. You know, we see a dream again, and he's got to go get the crow up in the tree, and then Catelyn shows up and gives him a stern talking to about climbing, and you know,
and he awakes with the look of failure.
And then we just get a short. Jojen's like, you know what you have to do.
Well, you're going to have to go back to sleep. Try dreaming again. Do it again.
I think that's all we really got of that.
Yeah. Just kind of touching base. What are your predictions for next week?
I gave you the first one. The second one was, if you give away a dragon in a negotiation, I mean, all you have to do is snap your fingers and say, come here, dragon, burn this guy. Even I know that.
Yeah, I mean, he might have seen that coming, but...
You know something, Phil Jonak.
So, she's marching with a huge CG army now, and three fucking dragons floating around. How do you stop that?
Getting bigger all the time. She's on the move, man, and she's on the come up. She's got two seasoned advisors. It seems to me like she would steal whatever ships she wants to carry all the troops. That's a lot of troops.
Yeah.
She has a march.
How many boats would you need?
Westward march across. I think they hinted at some maybe kind of ethical situations coming up. Maybe she's going to march west. And someone said, you know what you got to do with these, the unseasoned troops, you got to march them against.
Blood them early?
Blood them early.
Which she did. Like, as way earlier than the guys.
Yeah, but I don't blood them now.
I don't think it was much blooding.
They're going to march west. They have some desert to cross. They need food. They're coming up on some cities. So I guess we'll see what happens there.
I did like the handlers that were just kind of casually walking by, get the spears through the guts. Yeah.
I guess they don't know Old Valerian, or they would have been running already.
Yeah. Oh, you mean me? No. I'm nice. You're the first to be stabbed.
So, I mean, yeah, she's front runner in my eyes right now. Theon and the Kingslayer are at low points.
Yeah.
A few people on the move here.
Haven't seen any Rob.
No, which...
Rob's like next to last.
We saw him...
Not doing good.
In the preview, which some weird shit's going to happen compared to the books.
Okay.
Melisandre's got a plan cooking.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget.
Aching for some...
The one true king.
Yes.
A lot of
irons in the fire?
Irons in the fire. Throw that 9-iron on the fire. But new irons are being introduced. I mean, Beric Dondarrion. Brand new character here. What did you say? Like 48 episodes into the show?
Well, I was exaggerating, but yeah.
How many seasons? This is season 3.
Wasn't there 10 episodes per season?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it was 10. So we're only early 20s, but yeah, new player. Playa.
Ragged, small army, but
ragtag bunch.
Lofty beliefs.
Yeah. And who knows what else. We'll see next time.
All right, gang.
Until next time.
Grow strong.
Stay frosty.